Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Molly and Hall.
We're trying to wake Chicago up.
Live at 5 on 670 The Score.
And here they come.
I don't know if Chris Bryant volunteering or agreeing to become the leadoff man during spring training is going to provide the answer all season long, but it does give them a bit of stability. I think it also shows, number one, you can feel like, as a Cub fan, all right, let's just look at opening day. Let's look at the first part of the season. Chris Bryant is going to be here, right? Because that was the question as recent as a week ago. Number two, it showcases his versatility. We know that he can play several positions in the field, but he's willing to bat anywhere in the order, to score runs, to kind of take the extra base, to be a guy on the bases that you trust.
Am I wrong to believe that he's headed for a really good year? I like everything he says. It's about the maturity of this guy as a person and speaking his own mind. And now I'm liking everything he does.
Everything that he has done in the offseason or said, or frankly, and we've both been around sports long enough to know this, things he hasn't said. He could have made this more awkward. He could have made this more difficult. He could have made this about him. And this whole speculation, this whole thing has not been about him. He has handled it in a way that's been professional.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall.
Good morning, guy over there.
Mornings on The Score.
Score's now 100-93, but the Bulls' offense started off in the third quarter better, but it struggled here a little bit in the fourth quarter, with 45 seconds left.
Graham double on the ball in backcourt, throws it ahead to Malik Monk. Monk on a drive, Monk to the rim. Monk with the finish, count it, and a foul. Malik Monk.
Wow.
And they're going to review this, Bill. They're going to challenge this. Jim Boylan wants a challenge.
Come on, really? I want to get out of here.
Mully Hall.
I'm so fired up.
Here we go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's a new one, David. That's a new one right there.
Morning, Mully.
How are you, sir?
It's Friday. We made it.
Another way to extend the game is to offer a challenge late in the game.
41 seconds left.
Down 9.
And Jim Boylan wants to...
Let's look at that again.
Yeah, let's take another look. Let's not. Let's look away.
Yeah, what do you mean no?
The final 26 games are going to be a real challenge.
I want to get out of here!
For everybody.
Yeah, Jim is going to... They could be the final games of his tenure, but he's going to make them last. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Seven losses in a row.
Don't go gentle into that dark night.
Seven losses in a row. Season high losing streak. Season worst, 18 games under 500. This wasn't one of the better teams in the NBA last night that did this to the Bulls. This was the Hornets.
They didn't turn up. They didn't even show up to start that game. The first half of that game, they missed. They went 0 for 15 from three-point land. And then they missed the next two to start the
What does that do to your confidence? You missed your first 15 shots as a team.
I got this, coach. Don't worry.
How you feeling when you aim for the 16th? How you feeling at number 17?
Make it rain!
They started 0 for 17 from three. And this is the team that everybody welcomes on their schedule, the Bulls. This is what it has been reduced to.
Yeah.
Final 26 games of the season. All sorts of rumors about who's next. They're already identifying potential candidates. And it is a challenge to pay attention to one of the hardest teams in the league to follow.
But they're really hard to watch. I mean, it's just hard to watch. And I get it. The numbers say, the metrics say that if you knock down a certain number of threes, you're going to, I mean, you're going to injure someone.
Yeah, you just didn't see anything last night that really was like, oh, yeah, well, at least Thad Young played well. Yeah, well, okay.
You think it was the All-Star game? There was just everybody was so just let down by the fact that they're not good enough to be in the All-Star game.
Did you see how many empty seats there were? Yeah. Again, that is going to speak
the problem
as loudly as any statement on the court is the seats that are empty and, you know, apathy and irrelevance and all those things and all those words, they're there. That's real.
The Suns are coming in on Saturday. So,
oh, okay.
Get your tickets.
plenty of them are available. Another, you know, bad team the Bulls should beat.
Yes.
Before the schedule gets real tougher. And it's hard to envision, you know, this team winning. Well, I mean, how many losses? How many? They're 18 games under 500 right now. They've got 26 left to play. Where's the season headed? The lottery.
Yeah. Well, it's headed
nowhere.
They're
going to need some luck.
Yeah. You know, here's the problem. They're headed to the lottery. They're going to need some luck. They're going to get some luck. And then who are they going to draft? It's not like there's a Zion Williamson sitting there waiting for you.
Or John Morant. This isn't the draft right. that you want to necessarily look at as a means of, you know, okay, we're going to rebuild now because we're going to get that generational player. Right. I don't know if that guy is in this draft yet. Maybe they could find somebody like that, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, but they've been there before.
Yeah, far too many times. Yeah. From White Sox camp, Rick Hahn, talking about Rick Renteria, saying we knew he was capable of being a World Series championship manager.
I
forgot they won it, but that's fantastic.
We missed the parade.
Yeah.
We slept through the parade. God. I knew, you know, that's pretty bad.
Well, I hope he is capable of being a World Series championship manager. But Rick Hahn saying it was never a guy, in our opinion, who was simply going to get us from A to B, and we'd have to find someone else to win a championship. Well, that's a very nice thing to say. We believe he can get there. But we knew he was capable.
Yeah, it's not something that makes a lot of sense right now to talk in those terms. I think it's probably context is required to find out how that came up and why he was addressing that.
Yes,
because this is a team that is, you know, on the rise and they're ready to make that jump from 72 victories last year to what you feel like is in the high 80s this year, compete for a playoff spot. Maybe Rick Renteria is that guy. But I'll tell you this, what all this stuff does, Molly, all this rhetoric, and it's very positive and understandable, pressure's on. If the Sox start slowly, you know who is the most uncomfortable baseball employee in town? It's not David Ross. It's the other manager.
Okay.
I think he's going to face some heat quickly if they've got to start well.
Oh, they're going to have to start well. They're going to have to start well anyway. But, yeah, the expectations are raised pretty high for the White Sox.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they got a couple of teams in their division they should be able to beat up on. Don't they have Kansas City a lot early in the season? You need to win all those games. You need to beat the teams that you're supposed to beat in order to become the team you're supposed to become.
But would you agree that nobody in a White Sox uniform will face any more pressure than early on because of that than Renteria?
Yeah, probably. I would say that's accurate. I don't think there's tons of pressure on the White Sox. I mean,
they won a World Series. They have to repeat.
Robert, maybe he's on.
They won a World
Series. Yeah,
I'm sorry. It's tough to repeat.
It's hard. Tim Anderson talked about the Astros. That's pretty good. We're coming for everyone the same way, but they have a little icing on their cake. They cheated so many games we played, we got to make it sweet for them. You got to like that.
It's great.
I love
that's
going
to be a great episode on his YouTube channel.
Oh, my God.
I can't wait for that one.
I'm with you.
Did you see what Jonathan LaCroix said in Boston? The former Cub, by the way. Former Cub, A, Mariner, and Angel, I believe. He ripped the Astros.
Yeah,
he was the latest guy. Just absolutely tore into them.
David Ortiz, not so much.
No. the defender of.
Yeah, he went after Mike Fiers. Yeah. He said he looks like a snitch.
Yeah, the defender of clubhouse tradition.
Yeah, come on.
A lot of guys probably agree with David Ortiz. I'm not one of them.
No, I mean, whatever. The Cubs' probable starter for the first three games, Alec Mills Saturday against the A's, Tyler Chatwood Sunday at the Dodgers, and Adbert Alzolay Monday at the Mariners. Chatwood, of course, is the man that's supposed to be the fifth starter. He's leading for that spot, but the aforementioned Alec Mills and Alzolay both under consideration. And it's the start of the Saturday game, right? Won't that be broadcast on Marquee?
It will.
So be an answer to a trivia question one day.
Yeah, Alec Mills.
Yeah.
Who was the first starting pitcher the first game? I'm still trying to figure out what channel it's on.
I don't know, right? Which one is on my television.
I feel pretty good about
it. You're not going to get it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. David knows where not to look.
I'm supposedly getting it, David, and I don't know what channel it's on. So,
well,
that's somewhat remarkable. That's a miss, isn't it, in terms of a marketing execution of a marketing plan?
I'm not worried about the miss. Because I have the same cable system as Dustin.
So he'll send me a text about five minutes. What channel is it?
Exactly. Because like I know he'll do all the searching.
She couldn't find the Cubs games on TV before. And my answer would be always, well, you know, Mom, you could always put on 670 The Score.
Okay, I'm going to call BS here because it's Saturday.
Molly and I texting on the weekend?
No. That's not what I was going to say. Molly sitting kind of get set up to watch a Cubs exhibition opener from spring training for the Cubs on Saturday and February. I can't see that happening.
Oh, that will definitely happen.
I can't
see that
happening.
There's not a shadow of a doubt. I am very curious to see when that channel starts. I'm very serious about this. I want to watch the minute that it comes live on the air. And I want to see I said to Dustin, when does the Ernie Banks thing? I thought that was like the big the documentary on Ernie Banks.
That's from 8 a.m. until 4.
Well, no, so that's not true.
It starts at 1 p.m., right?
So the information that we do know is that from what I read yesterday, it goes on at 1 o'clock our time. That's what matters, right? 1 o'clock Central.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's going to start with like a We Are Marquee. So they're going to introduce all the people involved. They're going to show off the new studios.
Right.
They're going to let you know the plan.
Listen up closely, Snowflake.
I'm very interested.
That might be how they open.
Yeah. I will be listening.
So that's 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon?
1 o'clock tomorrow. But I'll find it.
You know, I'll record it, David. You can come over to the house.
Okay,
later and
I will. Yeah, I'll be. No, I don't think that I
can hold
can
it.
We
up.
Can we FaceTime with you, David?
Yeah, I'll hold the phone up.
And how about Crane? Can we
TV?
Get a three way? Because Crane doesn't have either, right? Crane County doesn't.
I'll be at a college hockey game. I'll kind of have that in the background. You know,
perfect.
That'd be great.
You can show
atmosphere.
Me the hockey game, and I'll show
you. Yeah, look, hey, look, Butler's winning or losing, whatever. I'm curious. I will say that I'm curious to see how they launch this. I'm curious to see what
we have information already coming in. One guy says on DirecTV it's 664. Dustin, for your purposes, AT&T UVerse 704.
All right, don't text
me then.
So
that's got to be 1704.
Because we you have to have it in HD. Drives me nuts. Does anybody else's wife do this? My wife watches everything in non-HD.
Really?
And then I come into the room.
Why?
And she's like, why are you changing the channel? I'm like, why are you watching it in non-HD? It's not even a program I want to watch. I just don't like the fact that it's not filling
it's
up the
principle
entire.
Of the
it's
matter.
Not filling up the entire, like Bachelor. She's watching Bachelor on 7 instead of on 1007.
Right.
It just fill up the screen.
Why? She just doesn't care.
I have no idea.
Nostalgia?
Because I'm going to walk by and change.
Takes
it
her back?
I don't know. I have no idea. But it's like,
fashioned.
Come on.
Well, what really stinks is if you accidentally tape something on regular TV instead of on HD, right?
Oh, right. She'll do that, too.
That's
why
awful.
Isn't this recording?
Yeah.
Right? Why isn't it? Because I'm recording it in HD. Why would I record it in regular TV?
Now we got a guy checking in saying it's 1740.
You might not want to trust the text.
Yeah, I don't.
Maybe somebody's
we
got
We need to find out.
But see,
find out.
Well, it can't be 1740 because 1741 is NBC Sports Chicago.
Yeah, so it could be 1740. It could be right before.
Well, I think
that makes
it's probably 1704.
That makes sense. 1740 makes more sense.
Well, it does if you think
we'll find
that
out
the
officially.
Cable network is making sense.
No offense to the texters.
But, I wonder if Comcast would want them right next to them.
we've gone out. David is trying to tell us we've gone off the rails.
He's gone totally
talking
off the
about
rails,
this because he doesn't have.
Oh, gosh.
All right. We got a lot to get into. We're going to get
Envy.
Into all of it.
There's Envy.
All the baseball news. We've got the new CBA. The owners have voted to accept it. We'll find out what the players vote next. And I love this one. The Nevada State Athletic Commission has barred heavyweight world title holder Deontay Wilder and lineal champion Tyson Fury from participating in the traditional face-off at the weigh-in. So they're going to weigh in tonight, but they're not going to face off because they're worried that the two of them are going to start swinging at each other. And that really makes the fight that much better, doesn't it?
Makes sense.
So it's almost like more hype. It's
absolutely.
More hype for the fight.
Over under 500 pounds total weight.
Oh, I'm going over.
Over.
Oh, that's
right?
Over. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know about Wilder, but
big boys.
You know, I mean, Tyson Fury.
He might be close to three bills.
He's got to be three bills. He's a big man now.
I mean, yeah, he's probably every bit of 6'8". Yeah.
Yeah. He's a big man.
If I was 6'8", I'd be 300 too.
Good man. Look at you. I'm not 6'8", but I'm 3. Hey, that's not true.
No, you're on Nutrisystem.
I am. I'm doing well with that, so I'm very happy in life.
Molly from the morning show.
Can we mention this, that Loyola now in a first-place tie in the Missouri Valley after Indiana State, the Define Larry Bird program, beat up on Northern Iowa?
Well,
so that's good.
I mean, my morning's complete.
That's it. I knew I could make your morning. I knew I'd make you happy today. Mully and Haw, we've got the 5 at 5 next. Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The Wolves host the Rockford IceHogs on Sunday, 3 o'clock puck drop. The first 2,500 fans to arrive on Little Debbie Sunday receive a Wolves retro lunchbox. Visit chicagowolves.com.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
Rick Renteria said that either Yoan Moncada or Tim Anderson would hit first and second in the batting order, but he wasn't sure who would lead off. What do you think of that decision, and who would you prefer?
Yeah, I don't think there's an obvious guy to lead off for the White Sox. It's been one of the themes that I've been hammering all along is who's going to be the guy. I suppose out of that group, first of all, I would prefer neither of these guys. I don't think that either guy long-term should be at the top of the order. But I guess if I'm choosing between them, I would see. Here's the problem. You know, Moncada is a guy that you're trying to. Last year, he made a great jump forward. He had led off the year before. He made a big jump last year when they got him to swing earlier in counts. They felt that he was really struggling to look at pitches, and he was too patient at the plate, and they wanted him to swing earlier in counts, and that worked for him. So if you put him at the top of the order, is that a good idea? I think not. And Tim Anderson, you know, he's never been a guy to take a lot of walks. He's not going to work the count either in that fashion. And he won a batting title. So I kind of wished Anderson was deeper in the lineup. And I kind of wish Moncada was a little bit. I think Anderson, was he seven hole when he won the batting title? The majority of the year, that would be awesome if you had a guy that good down there, because it would tell you something about your lineup. But I guess to start the season, I'll go with Moncada leading off because he's done it before, and Anderson in the two hole. But I don't like it. I really don't.
I like the idea of Moncada. I think that he's a guy who's evolving as a hitter. He went from being a guy who struck out 217 times in 2018. He reduced that down to 154 last year. And 511 at-bats. This is somebody whose on-base percentage was .367. Chris Bryant's yesterday, we were talking about him going to leadoff. It was .382. So, I mean, there are things you probably would like to see, numbers that are higher. But I like the idea of having somebody that explosive. He hit 25 home runs last year. He's going to give you some pop. And what we talked about yesterday when we talked about, Chris Bryant and comparing him to George Springer and this sort of idea that you put your top hitters at the top of the order and just lead him off and get him as many at-bats. There's a lot to like about that. I think Moncada can be a guy who is, selective, and he can evolve, and he's pretty disciplined. So I don't mind that. And I like the idea of Tim Anderson, behind him probably more than in front of him. Last year when he did bat seventh and he did win the batting title, I remember complaining a lot about, why is he batting seventh? So this makes a lot of sense if you're Rick Renteria, if you're Rick Hahn, if you're all the analytics people in the White Sox, brain trust or boardroom or whatever, wherever it is they meet to talk about these things, that you put Moncada at the top, you have your batting champion batting second, and that also lessens the pressure on Luis Robert, who might be one day, ideally, the guy you put up there, but you don't have to put him up there immediately. So I kind of like this trend.
Yeah, the Robert thing, David, I was thinking that as well. The other thing, too, and Nick Madrigal may not even make the team out of spring training, not because he's not good enough, but, the whole service time thing and whatnot. But I think he is 100% the answer to this question. Moncada, I think, is ideal for the two-hole. I've seen him quoted as saying that that's where he likes to hit. I liked, Molly, I'm with you, I liked Anderson down toward the middle slash end of that lineup. He was very comfortable there. He produced there. I think your short answer to who should lead off is whoever plays second base. If that's Leury Garcia, if it's Danny Mendick, I don't know that that's exactly how you want to get going. And then we had Ricky yesterday, claiming one of these two guys would do it. I think moving Moncada out of the two hole is a mistake. I would leave him there and settle on whether it's Anderson, Madrigal, whoever it is. I would just leave Moncada at two.
Well, as much as I like Tim Anderson, I certainly do not want him leading off. I think having a guy that only got on base via base on balls 15 times last year is a bad idea. It's not really sustainable in the one spot in the batting order. Actually, the guy that led the team in walks last year, Yolmer Sanchez, is no longer with the organization, and he only walked 44 times himself. After that, it was Moncada with 40 and Abreu with 36. So they didn't really have anybody that walked and was able to get on base consistently last year in that regard. They signed Yasmani Grandal, who walked 109 times last season. 109 times. Got on base at a .380 clip. He's also got the power. He's always going to have a good at-bat, no matter where he is in the order. So where better to have him than leading off the game and making the pitcher work right out of the gate, making him throw a lot of pitches.
Amen.
Have Yasmani Grandal lead off.
Well, Kevin does have the right answer, but that wasn't the question.
Is this the first?
Okay, out of these two, I would prefer Moncada.
Thank you. Answer the question.
Well, I said anybody but Anderson, essentially answering the question without actually saying it.
Without actually answering the question.
That's right. Right. Try and keep up.
Okay. I want the bat. I want the bat flipper up at the top. Let's see, because now he's doing a lot of talking. Talk, YouTuber. He's a big YouTuber.
That's why
now.
You want him in a bad spot.
So I want to see. Well, let's see. Let's see if he can back it up now, okay? And if he can, congratulations, okay? I want the bat flipper up at the top.
I don't quite get the question.
David Ross looks decisive in naming Anthony Rizzo to bat second behind Chris Bryant. Does that decisiveness suggest Ross will act independently as a manager or make you wonder if he's trying too hard to show he's not a front office puppet?
That's always the perception he's going to fight, and I think that's probably unfair, but he's a first-time manager who's their handpicked guy who was groomed for this job. So you're always going to wonder if he's just an extension of the front office. He sort of walks that line pretty well when he talks about the analytics guys, and he knows when his ideas aren't met with favor, when they're met with silence. And so that's kind of funny to hear him talk about the dynamic there. But I like the way that he has approached both of these decisions, and I think they came on successive days. I can't wait till today to find out who bats third, because we find out who bats first one day, who bats second the next day. It's today's announcement. Javi Baez like will bat third.
No, yeah. It's like stretch it out.
Advent calendar.
Exactly.
Each day you get a piece of chocolate and you find out who's hitting next in the lineup.
Javi. So I think I like the way he explained it. I didn't get chills like Wilson Contreras thinking about Bryant and Rizzo at the top of the order, or the, you know, expansion of the Brizzo franchise at the top of the Cubs batting order. But David Ross has done a nice job of articulating why each guy makes sense and why it fits into this Cubs roster and what he's looking for out of each guy. So far, I would say that the first 10 days or so of spring training, David Ross has done a nice job of establishing his space as a manager. I think he's always going to fight that perception, as I said earlier, but so far, so good for him.
Yeah, I mean, didn't Theo tell him these are the two guys he wants in that order? I mean, I'm just saying, I don't think he did this independent of anybody else. I think that this was a decision that they came to, and he is, his job is to sort of make sure that those decisions go into action. And I'm not calling him a puppet, but you know, what's he having for lunch? Ask Theo.
Wow. Well, and you know what? It's funny, too, because you think about it. What was his role with the organization the past few years? He was a special assistant to Theo, right? I mean, so you've got to think that whatever Theo thinks in some way, shape, or form is kind of permeated into David Ross's head just based on proximity and the years they've worked together and his previous job. And I mean, I don't think it's wrong to necessarily collaborate with.
So what you're trying to say, I suppose, that Rossi's having the chowder for lunch.
Yes, he's right. Exactly. No, and it's not necessarily wrong to bounce stuff off Theo. I don't need to have, you know, give me old school Don Zimmer making lineup with door locked. I don't necessarily need that, but I don't know that it shows either that he's trying to be a puppet or that he's decisive. I think Rossi's going to weigh everything that he's got, all the information he has, and make the best decision that he can. And if he bounces it off of upstairs because that's what he's got to do, and naturally they wouldn't tell us that, then I think that's what's happening. So,
well, I don't want to say that David Ross is in a no-win situation here, because he's got a great job. I mean, how many people would want to manage any major league team, let alone one with as much talent as the Cubs have? So he's in a great spot, but he's always going to have that criticism kind of hanging over him, especially after being the one to succeed Joe Maddon. You know, is he really in charge, or are Theo and Jed really calling the shots or pulling the strings, if you want to call Rossi a puppet or anything like that? Maybe Theo has wanted to try Chris Bryant in the leadoff spot for many years, and Joe Maddon just would not jibe with that for whatever reason. He just wasn't feeling it that day, man. You know, he didn't want to put it on T-shirt, dude. So it makes me kind of question. I mean, we're going to be doing it all year, right? Because of the way that we all anticipated David Ross becoming the manager, how he was kind of the heir apparent for so long, and he was, Espo, like you said, the assistant to Theo for the past couple of seasons. It's, I don't want to call him a puppet, because I don't think that's fair, and I think every team should have a good relationship between their executives and their manager, and there should be collaboration, and they should talk about the lineup and all of that stuff. So if I'm a Cub fan, and I'm not, but if I were, I would be happy with these developments lineup-wise that have come up for the first couple of days, and maybe we'll find out who's hitting third, and then over the weekend we'll find out who's hitting fourth, and maybe they'll unveil, one per day. But just as an aside, I would have Wilson Contreras hitting third if these are the two guys that are going to be at the top of my lineup.
And speaking for all Cubs fans, we're glad you're not with us.
I'm right there with you, buddy.
To answer the question, couldn't it be possible that Rizzo has told Ross that he wants to bat second? Maybe could he be the ultimate player's manager? And the other thing is,
let me ask a question. I think that, doesn't Rizzo strike you as a guy, and hasn't he said this before, he wants to be third or fourth?
Well, I think he wants to. I think if he got to pick, he'd bat fourth.
Right.
Okay, but unfortunately, that's also because of a contract, right? Guys who bat cleanup right? And the Rizzo contract is going to be Cups something else that we're going to be hearing about a lot this this season. So that's another thing. Everybody has a boss, okay? And we see what happens when the you don't get along with your boss, you get another boss. So, and Theo's got a boss too, and maybe him and his boss don't get along, and we're going to see what happens. Everybody's got a boss. They're all playing in the sand. They're all trying to play in the sandbox nicely. So let's just give it some time, let it breathe, and see. That's what spring training is for. That's why we have the Marquee Network. That's why we have 670 The Score. We're going to see how these guys do in spring training.
Sandbox Cam.
Everyone's got the score.
Everybody's got the score.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a question we're going to ask management here today.
As reports continue to surface about the Bulls preparing for big changes in the offseason, Casey Johnson reported of the team's interest in Pacers general manager Chad Buchanan. Can the Bulls lure a big-name executive? Chad Buchanan. Can the Bulls lure a big-name executive, or will it more likely be a guy doing this job for the first time?
Well, I would say that Chad Buchanan's done a pretty good job. That team is pretty good, and they put that team together pretty good. I think that'd be a nice hire for the Bulls if indeed that's accurate, and if KC's reporting it, I believe it. So that sounds fine. You know, can the Bulls lure a big-name executive, or be more likely a guy doing the job for the first time? I don't see why they couldn't lure a big-name executive. Maybe not the biggest-name executive. It just comes down to exactly how much they're willing to pay for that guy. I mean, you can lure anyone if you give them the capital and you give them the resources and the power. So, I would have no problem with Chad Buchanan. I think they're going to make a move, and hopefully it's someone that we've heard of before, but you got to give whoever they make a move to all the opportunity to do that job, and hopefully it's someone with experience. But, I mean, look around the league. You know, people are hiring agents that don't have experience doing it, but they've done pretty good jobs doing it. So I can't get too worked up about this until I see who the hire is, and then you watch that go into play. So I don't have a problem with what they're doing.
How many people outside of Oklahoma City knew the name Sam Presti before Sam Presti became one of the most sought-after and respected executives in the league? Probably not many. I mean, how many people knew the name Masai Ujiri outside of Toronto, outside of Denver, before he became one of the most sought-after executives in the league? Probably not many. These aren't names that, unless you're in the business, that resonate. And I think that you make a good point, Mully, because Chad Buchanan is quietly respected. He did some work in Portland where nobody really pays a lot of attention to, but Portland, the way that he drafted out there with the Pacers, another market that tends to not be, you know, a big market in Indianapolis. I don't know if Chad Buchanan is the answer, but I do think it fits the profile of guys who might be under the radar, guys who might not cost you $5 or $10 million and draft compensation to try to get in the room and negotiate a contract with, because that's what you're facing if you want to go after what I would call a name brand executive, somebody who is, you know, proven and you would have a lot of confidence in, the basketball equivalent, if you will, of Theo Epstein, somebody like that. Hey, that would be great for the Bulls to do that, to kind of invite those people and to lure them into the Advocate Center and say, fix our problem, because it's a big one. But I just don't see that happening. I think it's probably going to be somebody who might be doing the job for the first time, that doesn't have a big ego, that is respected around the league. And whether it's Chad Buchanan or somebody like that, I think people should get used to figuring out. They're going to be reading a lot about some of these names they don't necessarily recognize, but that doesn't mean they can't do the job either.
David, this should scare you. I literally was pulling up Sam Presti's Wikipedia page as you mentioned his name. I'm like, wait a second here. This is too... But that was the first name I thought of. He started as an intern with the Spurs and then worked his way up and got hired eventually as the GM for Oklahoma City. And, you know,
anyone from the Spurs does great with the Bulls.
Just look at Dennis Rodman.
I was thinking the coach.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. No, he'd be the first one to tell you that he knows Pop. That's pretty much his claim to fame, right? He got Pop water bottles or something.
Can I at least think of Dennis Rodman fondly for that? No, but so the Sam Presti thing, I mean, if you're going to do something like that, I would be for it. But, I mean, hey, if you're considering someone who is already a GM, that's very un-Bulls-like, isn't it? I mean, you want to hire somebody with experience who knows what they're doing. If it's a young up-and-comer, preferably, right? I think that's the best way to go. It certainly can't be worse. Let's kick the tires on a lot of these guys. I don't know anything specifically about Chad Buchanan, but as you just said, David, you know, in a few smaller markets, this guy has had some success. Sure, I am all for it, and Casey's as plugged in as anybody. He certainly would know what he's reporting here. So let's see. Sure, I'm excited to see whatever changes they may make.
Well, a few things here. First of all, if you want to look up a picture of Chad Buchanan to see what he looks like, you have to specify Chad Buchanan NDA on your search. Otherwise, you will get a bevy of pictures of a hunky shirtless man, and you don't need that at this point in the morning. So if you want to look for him, Chad Buchanan NBA, and he looks like an NBA executive and a rather anonymous one. David, you make a good point. It's not like baseball where, you know, people know the names like Cashman or Epstein, Dombrowski, Andrew Friedman. You know, in baseball, these team builders are more well-known for whatever reason. I'm not really sure why that is. Maybe it's just because they play so many damn games. But looking up what Chad Buchanan has done, making the playoffs 8 out of the last 9 years in Indiana, headed for another playoff berth this year, he has drafted a hell of a lot better than the Bulls have drafted. He has acquired superstar players. He is able to do that, something else the Bulls have not been able to do over the past decade. So it would be a good hire if you want to add this guy to the organization. I think that, you know, adding almost anybody would seem like a positive option the way this thing has been headed. But, you know, there's a big bald elephant in the room, and it's John Paxson. He's going to be hanging around over your head. Is he going to let this guy do his work and do what he wants? If John Paxson is still in the room, still in the boardroom, and has a role in the office or the front office, I should say, is he still going to be the final say on personnel? I don't like that idea. So, you know, if Chad Buchanan does end up coming here to work under John Paxson, I would say the only advice I would have for him is do what Fred Hoiberg did and don't wear a tie around.
Yeah, you look at his Wikipedia. It's good. It's fine. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with it. But it's just, it's not going to excite the fan base, right? It's not going to the guys that are going to excite the fan base are going to cost you $10 million a year and probably 5 or 6 of those years guaranteed. If we're talking about the guy in Toronto, it might cost you draft picks. If we're talking about the guy in Oklahoma City, it might cost you more than one draft pick. It might cost you 2 draft picks and then $50 or $60 million. Where does the $50 or $60 million come from?
Attendance money.
Well, it comes from the team, right? There's no cap. So that's money that will not go back into the pockets of the owners, plural. It's not just the Reinsdorfs are not the only ones here. It's I don't think it's quite like the White Sox, but it's sort of like the White Sox, right? There's not just one or two people involved here. There are many people involved here, okay? But the empty seats at the United Center are starting to speak to them. The other thing, luxury tax, okay? It's not like baseball's luxury tax. You just have to pay it, and it gets split up among the other teams. If you want to be a real player in the NBA, you have to be willing to be in the luxury tax. Are the Bulls going to be willing for a extended period of time, be willing to be in the luxury tax? I think that's also going to help with who the next GM is. Meaning, does that GM want to come to a team that's not willing to be in the luxury tax? He then is handcuffed.
Are they unwilling to or unable to? Because
well,
to
they're get, not unable to, David. Well,
No.
They're not
no,
unable
to. I'm saying to be able to get to the luxury tax, you have to pay elite players. Can they get elite players to pay? Nobody wants to come here to get paid.
I'm with you, David.
That's what I'm saying,
okay.
Unable to.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, does Chad Buchanan, who has Chad Buchanan drawn to Indianapolis? Give me a name.
Victor Oladipo is a pretty good player.
Paul George was there for a while.
But they drafted Oladipo.
No. Oladipo's on his third team.
Yeah.
He's acquired. That was a trade of all trades. That's one of the best trades in the NBA in the last 5 years.
Free agent. What I said. Free agent. What free agent has he? What free agent has he got to come? Their money in India is as green as ours, and they almost have as good as steakhouses.
You make good trades. You don't need to sign free agents.
Okay.
You asked me that same question the other day.
No, I wasn't at your meeting.
No, I'm messing with you.
Was Derek Carr just trolling everybody when he posted a picture on his Instagram account with Khalil Mack? Or is that a real sign that Carr has interest in joining the Bears if the Raiders cut him?
Boy, they look good together. You know, they do, those two guys. And I'm sure he's just trolling. But it was a good reminder to me that this is the guy that I've been saying since this sort of speculation began, that if he's cut, if he's available, if he's out there, the Bears he makes more sense for the Bears than a lot of possibilities that we have discussed. And we have, you know, probably outside of the realm of possibility and outside unrealistic. Derek Carr would fit. He's a guy with some Pro Bowls in his resume. He's got some skill set. He's a leader. He also is good friends with Khalil Mack. They've been teammates before. So I don't know the significance of an Instagram photo. I think I'll let somebody else kind of translate those kind of things. He might be having fun because this is the way players do. Remember, Wilson Contreras did something on his social media accounts. It turned out to be nothing, and he acknowledged later he was just having fun with people. But if the Raiders are foolish enough to cut Derek Carr, the Bears should be the first team that calls him, because to me, that makes a lot of sense.
I don't know if it's an invitation or a plea, but it's either, hey, I'm going to be available, why don't you come and get me? Or it's, get me the hell out of here. Bring me to my Khalil. And either way, I think that that should make you feel pretty good if you're a Bears fan. Now, wanting to go someplace, it's got to be a two-way street. So what we don't know, we know that recently you had a tight end that was a former Bear that said, why don't they call me? Why don't they come for me? I will go there. And instead he wound up going to Seattle. So they didn't call. They didn't want him. And he had no connection to Seattle, by the way. It's not like he ever lived there or ever. Sure, he's visited, but that was a football decision that you make based on the interest that's shown in you. So maybe he's drumming up interest from the Bears. Maybe he's legitimately interested in coming here. But certainly it is an invitation of sorts, if not a plea.
Well, and certainly for Greg Olsen, he gets to play with Russell Wilson. So that's pretty good instead of Mitch. So I think I would take that one. To the Derek Carr thing, though, he's got to know at this point that Gruden doesn't love him, that Gruden is not, he is not the long-term John Gruden quarterback, right? He knows that. It's just a matter of, when does John Gruden find the John Gruden quarterback? Is it Tom Brady? Is it one of the many, many free agents this year? And certainly Khalil's his guy, and they're buddies from their old Oakland days. So it's an Instagram post. It is what it is, but it's fun to think about it. The bigger question on the Bears side of this is, let's say all of this happens. Derek Carr becomes available because the Raiders sign a free agent and they cut Derek Carr, or Derek Carr goes on the trade market. Do the Bears even want him? Do they go after him? I mean, I think we all agree that they should, but do they? Will they? Would they? That,
yes.
I think, is the big
yes.
question. You think so?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to hear that. I would be all for it.
You know, I know I'm like the token millennial on this show, so I guess I'm the one that's supposed to decipher these social media posts and if there are any underlying, you know, any shade or thirst or anything going on social media. Tomorrow is Khalil Mack's birthday. I'm thinking it's just kind of a happy birthday post to his friend. They're good friends, right? Apparently, from their time together, stay in touch. They were friendly with each other in the game in London this past season. I think it's just a couple of friends keeping in contact, wishing a happy birthday.
Why didn't he write happy birthday on it?
He didn't write anything on it.
Well, he just left.
He wanted schmucks like us to be
HBD.
Talking about it
exactly.
On the radio. Somewhere.
Easy with the name, Colin.
And why do you think he would want us to talk about it?
Because he's coming to Chicago.
No, because it's an invitation. It's not a plea.
I think he was specifically trolling Brad Biggs. That's what I think, because Brad loves to talk about
future quarterbacks
with the with the Bears.
That's going to get him blocked.
I'm going to do my best to submit this question to Brad's mailbag. Is David Carr a possibility to play quarterback for the Bears in 2020?
Dustin from Elmhurst.
From the 630. Oh.
That's a great question.
If the NFL adopting a 17-game season creates enough revenue to help pay bills of retirees, is that enough to justify the health risks for current players? And are you okay with the extra game?
Well, I'm a fan, so I want to see extra games. I want to see as many games as humanly possible. You know, I heard someone talk about this, and I think it's a fascinating thing to consider. There are 32 teams in the league. Effectively, each team plays an extra game. So what you're doing is you're adding two 16-game seasons. You're adding effectively two extra franchises to the league, and you're doing that for nothing. And how much is an NFL franchise worth, right? So it's a massive amount of money that you're adding. We know there are players that already have contracts that this isn't included in what the big-ticket items are. They just continue to get their paycheck. It just goes down because you're paid on a weekly basis, game by game. I think that if I were a player, I would consider the health risks. If I were a player, I would consider what happens with one extra game late in the year. How does that change your team potentially with injury going into the playoffs? As a fan, I'm all over it. I want them to okay it. As a player, I think that that I would have to give it a second thought and give it a second look, and I would wonder, you know, why this is so beautiful for me.
And the players are pushing back a little bit. You've heard from Richard Sherman in the past about the 17th game idea. Yesterday on
JJ Watt.
On JJ Watt, he came back with a hard no in terms of he tweeted that out as far as the CBA proposal. And I do think that's something to reconcile, is that, you know, when we talk about how much we love watching the playoffs, and I think they're two different things in terms of, you know, the playoff proposal for an extra playoff team in each conference, and then the 17-game season. The owners are probably smart to attach both to the next CBA because they want to create the increase in revenue, but they've got to create assurances as well that the increase in revenue will be used to do something they're not doing a good enough job of right now, and that's taking care of retired players' health needs, because they're growing, and they're going to grow even more in theory if you add an extra game. So it is a bit, I don't want to be hypocritical and just say, okay, you look the other way, you ignore all these health concerns because you love football and another game, and it's 17 is just one step closer to 18, and that's exactly where they're headed anyway, because the disparity in 9 home games and 8 home games is going to create too big of a problem. So just add an 18th game anyway. But I think they can figure it out, and I'd be curious to see what Andrew Brandt, we're going to talk to him at 7 o'clock, and I'm looking forward to that conversation, because guys smarter than us will be able to tell us exactly what maybe assurances have been made, because these are commitments you have to make from the ownership level. You have to commit to your retired players. It's been an issue for a long time now. So it's not, it's more than just adding a game and increasing our pleasure for the NFL football fan. You have some responsibilities from the league level too. Let's hope they uphold them.
Do you think that the players should be responsible for paying for the previous generation? And do you think they want to? I know where the league stands on it.
I think those are two different answers. Okay. I think they absolutely have a responsibility.
No question.
Because everybody's going to be in that situation but one day. I'm not sure that every player wants to.
I don't think they're looking at it like
no,
that.
No, I think because everybody looks in the short term.
Yeah, their view is get what I can now, and then I'll be taken care of later in life.
And I do like some of the little things that you see coming out of this proposal. The 17th game, they're going to add an extra offensive lineman to every active day roster. That's at least an acknowledgement of the wear and tear and the concerns and the risks that are involved. So I hope this is headed in the right direction.
Well, if there's ever a league that could pay for retirees' health care, it's the NFL, isn't it? I mean, without a 17th game, hell, without a 16th game, they could pay for the retirees' health care. But I as a football fan, I mean, we're all watching, well, in varying degrees, XFL football. So we would certainly take the extra game.
Speak whatever, for yourself.
Whatever the NFL is going to give us, we would say, thank you, sir. May I have another? Please give us more games. So that is easy. I would love to have as much NFL as possible. The The new CBA thing, I think that's where all of this comes down to. It just becomes fascinating. The new agreement with the player, between the players and the owners, as that unfolds, as that negotiation unfolds, it's really going to be fascinating, because with so much money floating around the league, and as you guys just said, you know, get what I can now from the player's perspective, but they have to be smarter about how they negotiate. They have to do more for the long term, and certainly on the retiree side, that is a big issue.
Well, I think football players in general are underpaid for how dangerous the sport is, how lucrative the NFL is, how much money that this machine actually brings in. I think all of these guys should not only be in line for raises, but anybody that ever played in the league should also have, you know, more rights and revenue to pay for their bills and pensions and everything else. I think anybody that ever played in the NFL should be entitled to more than what they already have currently, in the future, and in the past as well. So if they add another game, if it's 17, if it's 18 eventually, I just hope that the players get what they deserve, not only the current crop of players, but the past players as well.
Well said. I think it's good for the past players to get some. I don't mind more games. That's good. More things to watch, more things to bet on, more things to talk about. So I'm all for it. But add the game. It's good for everybody. I don't see what's bad about that. I get the health factor, but right, we've talked. You could get hurt in game one just as easily as you get hurt in game 17. Right? I mean, that's not a guarantee that one more game is why you did or didn't get hurt.
Or preseason game 3.
Right. Exactly. Unless you're on the Bears.
Unless you're on the Bears, where you're watching it.
Yep.
In street offensive Bears players don't have to worry about that.
By the way, to close the loop on the Indiana Pacer discussion, Dustin, you asked about questioning it. They couldn't think of the name, but the free agent the Pacers signed last offseason, Malcolm Brogdon. Good player.
Pretty good player.
312-644-6767 is the telephone number. It's Mully and Haw. It's Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.